Imagine for a second that you're driving a state-of-the-art sports car down the highway at night.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right, so it is incredibly fast. The ride is, you know, remarkably smooth. You've got the heated seats on, and you are just making incredible time. You feel totally untouchable.
But I'm guessing there's a catch here.
Yeah, exactly. So you look down at the dashboard, and the check engine light is flickering. The gas gauge is hovering like dangerously close to empty. And you suddenly remember you actually took the spare tire out of the trunk last week to make room for groceries.
Oh, wow. So you're flying blind, basically.
Right. You are moving at top speed,
Yeah.
but your margin for error is essentially zero. I mean, a single pothole could end the whole trip.
You know, that is a phenomenal metaphor for the global situation right now. I mean, we have built a civilization that is breathtakingly fast and capable, but we've basically stripped all the shock absorbers out of the suspension.
Exactly. And that tension, you know, between incredible capability and these completely shrinking safety buffers, that's exactly what we are exploring today. So please welcome Truth Seekers on behalf of the Great Awakening Report to this week's Truth Seekers Weekly Briefing Alternative News Review for June 19th.
It's great to be diving into this. We really do have a massive stack of sources today.
We do. But, you know, instead of relying on the mainstream media's habit of just looking at like isolated, panicked headlines, we are diving deep into alternative research, independent journalism, systems analysis, that sort of thing.
Right, because if you just watch the evening news, you get this barrage of random, disconnected events, like a supply chain hiccup here, a political scandal over there, a new tech rollout.
It just feels like total chaos.
Exactly. But the independent researchers in our briefing today, they're doing something different. They're looking for the master pattern. And they've identified this core theme that ties all this together, which they're calling the age of compression.
The age of compression. I like that. And to ground you, the listener, in what we are trying to achieve today, I actually want to pull a direct quote right from the briefing materials that says, "In a world clouded by distraction and deception, true power lies in seeing the bigger picture."
That's a great quote.
Yeah, I thought so too. Because the mission today is to help you maintain clarity, sovereignty, and honestly, emotional balance. We aren't here to predict the future. We are here to help you understand the hidden architecture of the present so you can navigate it without losing your mind.
Which is, it's an essential skill right now. And to really understand this age of compression, we have to start at the absolute base layer of civilization, which is physical energy infrastructure.
Right.
Because everything else from the global financial system down to the smartphone in your pocket is entirely downstream of energy.
Right. And our alternative sources are pointing to some very specific data flashing on that sports car dashboard we just talked about.
What stood out to you?
Well, the one that caught my eye immediately was Cushing, Oklahoma. The reports are highlighting that oil inventories at Cushing are dropping dangerously close to what the industry calls tank bottoms. Now, for the average person listening who doesn't trade commodities, why does a stockpile in the middle of Oklahoma matter to the global economy?
Well, Cushing is essentially the central nervous system of the United States oil market. It's this massive, sprawling complex of these huge white storage tanks, and it serves as the physical delivery point for West Texas Intermediate crude oil.
Okay.
It's literally where pipelines from all over the country intersect. So when analysts talk about reaching tank bottoms, they don't mean the tanks are completely, bone dry.
Right, they aren't empty.
No, they mean the oil level has dropped so low that it's approaching the physical limits of the suction lines. Like you actually start pulling up sludge and sediment, the whole system loses its operational flexibility.
But wait, I have to play devil's advocate here or just challenge that premise for a second. Because I read a mainstream headline just last week declaring that domestic oil production is at an all-time historic high.
Yes.
We are pumping massive amounts of energy. So how on earth are we simultaneously scraping the bottom of the barrel at the most important storage hub in the country?
Okay, so that is the exact paradox of the age of compression. You are entirely right. Production is high. But modern global economies have spent, well, the last 3 decades basically optimizing for extreme, ruthless financial efficiency.
What does that mean for oil, though?
In the business world, holding inventory is considered dead capital. It costs a lot of money to just store things. So we shifted to a just-in-time supply chain model.
Oh, right. Like with manufacturing.
Exactly. We don't stockpile massive reserves for a rainy day anymore. We extract it and immediately move it to where it's needed, or we just export it to global markets. We basically traded our physical resilience for financial efficiency.
Oh, wow. So it's like living paycheck to paycheck, but with the global energy supply. You might have a super high salary, but you have zero savings. So if your car breaks down, you're immediately in a crisis.
That is a perfect way to understand it. And when you operate a global energy system paycheck to paycheck, minor disruptions suddenly become these massive systemic threats.
Right.
Which is why our sources also highlight the ongoing geopolitical tensions in the Strait of Hormuz. In the past, if a critical global shipping lane faced a temporary bottleneck, massive localized reserves would buffer the shock.
Because we had savings.
Right. But today, because we are operating so close to the physical limits of our infrastructure, a disruption in the Middle East ripples instantly through global energy markets.
Which hits manufacturing, and then that delays shipping, which, eventually shows up as a huge spike in inflation at your local grocery store.
Exactly.
And the sources point out that this isn't just about oil either. We are doing the exact same thing to our electrical grid right at the moment when energy demand is violently spiking.
Yes. We have this aging electrical grid that was designed for, the consumption patterns of the 20th century. But now we are plugging in vast fleets of electric vehicles. And even more importantly, we are building massive artificial intelligence data centers.
Oh, the AI power draw is insane.
It is. The compute power required to train and run these new AI models consumes just a staggering amount of electricity. So we are applying next generation demand to legacy infrastructure, and we have very little buffer left.
Okay, so that perfectly illustrates the physical compression. We are running the machine hotter and faster with way less oil in the engine.
Right.
But what I found truly fascinating in this week's Alternative News Review is how this exact same pattern is repeating in the invisible structures of our society. Our social infrastructure is losing its buffers too. And by social infrastructure, I mean public trust.
Oh, absolutely. Trust is the ultimate currency of any functioning society. I mean, you can have the best technology and the most abundant energy in the world, but if the population fundamentally stops believing in the institutions that manage those resources, the whole system paralyzes.
Yeah, and the sources highlight this by pointing to a major theme in alternative media right now, which is the continued demand for pandemic accountability. Specifically, they bring up the ongoing focus on the Ron Johnson reports.
Right.
Now, for anyone who hasn't been tracking this, Senator Ron Johnson has been hosting these highly publicized roundtable panels, bringing in dissenting doctors, analysts, and citizens to openly question the data, the protocols, and the transparency of federal health agencies over the last few years.
And we must be incredibly clear here. We are not diving into the medical efficacy of those debates.
Not at all.
The medical specifics are really not the focus of our briefing today. What the independent systems analysts are highlighting is the structural phenomenon of these panels. Unresolved societal trauma and unanswered questions do not just vanish because the news cycle moves on.
Right. Whether you lean left, right, or center, the systemic signal here is that a massive portion of the population feels their trust was violated, and they are demanding an audit of the institutional response.
Yes.
But the sources pair this public skepticism with another major trend, which is the rapid expansion of global biosecurity frameworks. We are seeing all these headlines about international health agencies setting up new surveillance networks for diseases like hantavirus, Ebola, and the H5N1 avian influenza.
Which is exactly where the social friction is actively generating heat. A biosecurity framework essentially means creating institutional systems to monitor and control biological threats.
So what does that look like on the ground?
In practice, that looks like implementing mandatory wastewater testing in cities, or expanding international data sharing between health agencies, or even setting up protocols for travel restrictions based on real-time health data.
Look, I have to push back here again. If you have a highly lethal virus like Ebola or some mutating avian flu, an international system designed to track it and stop it from spreading seems like, objective public safety.
Yeah.
Why is the alternative media space flagging this as a massive systemic risk? Aren't these agencies just trying to keep the car from crashing?
It's a completely fair question, but it goes back to the concept of the buffer. The tension isn't necessarily about the scientific validity of wanting to track a virus. The tension is about a fundamental historic shift in how modern citizens grant trust to authority.
How so?
Well, for generations, society basically operated on authority-based trust.
Meaning, like, I have a fancy title on my door, I work for an acronym agency, therefore you should comply.
Precisely. The institution's mere existence was the proof of its credibility. But the independent analysts in our briefing argue that we have permanently transitioned into an era of transparency-based trust.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. The public no longer accepts the synthesized, curated conclusion just handed down from the podium. They want to see the raw data. They want to see the dissenting opinions. They are demanding ongoing, verifiable, informed consent.
Oh, I see. So if institutions try to expand their powers, like rolling out massive new biosecurity surveillance systems, while still demanding the old authority-based trust, it creates massive societal pushback.
Exactly. You cannot run a highly complex, highly intrusive crisis response system on a deficit of public trust. Mm-hmm. When people feel that past actions haven't been transparently audited, any new safety framework doesn't feel like a protective measure. It feels like a trap.
Wow.
Yeah, we are building emergency systems much faster than we are rebuilding the institutional credibility required to govern them.
Which bridges us perfectly into the third layer of this deep dive. We have physical infrastructure straining. We have social trust fracturing. And accelerating all of this at warp speed is the digital layer.
The digital layer is huge.
Right. The sources describe this as humanity's transition from the information age into the intelligence age. And this is where things get genuinely wild.
They do, because the technological acceleration we are experiencing right now is completely outpacing human adaptability. The briefing actually pairs two massive stories to illustrate this: the integration of artificial intelligence into the fabric of daily life, and the expansion of satellite networks like Starlink.
Yeah, and it's really crucial to understand that alternative analysts don't just view Starlink as a way to get, you know, decent Wi-Fi in a cabin in the woods.
Far from it.
They refer to it as the rollout of a planetary utility layer. It is becoming the foundational nervous system for global communications, global finance, AI data routing, and eventually autonomous military and commercial systems.
Yeah, and when you combine a planetary network with autonomous AI, you are fundamentally re-architecting how human beings interact with reality.
It reminds me of the ultimate smart home. Like, we are upgrading human civilization into this massive, incredibly convenient smart home.
Yes.
The lights turn on when you walk in, the fridge orders groceries when you're low, the temperature's always perfect, it's totally optimized. But if the centralized Wi-Fi router goes down, or the AI algorithm suddenly hallucinates and decides you aren't an authorized user, you literally cannot open your own front door.
You're just trapped.
Exactly. Are we willingly trading our sovereignty for convenience?
We are, and it represents a profound vulnerability. Humanity is building systems of literally unprecedented capability, but at the exact same time, we are creating an unprecedented dependency on a very small number of centralized, highly complex networks.
It's a huge risk.
It is. If everything from banking to hospital records to the energy grid runs on a singular planetary utility layer, then the health of that one layer dictates the survival of everything else.
But the dependency isn't just physical, is it? The briefing emphasizes that AI is creating a terrifying cognitive dependency, too. Like, the information environment itself is being polluted.
That is perhaps the most insidious part of the intelligence age. AI operates at machine speed. It's capable of flooding the digital ecosystem with automated narratives, synthetic content, and algorithmically amplified messaging.
What does that actually look like in practice, though? Like, how does it manipulate perception?
Well, think about how public consensus used to be formed. You'd talk to neighbors, read a few distinct news outlets, maybe see a protest in town.
Right, very localized.
Now, a localized AI model can be directed to generate tens of thousands of unique, context-specific articles, social media posts, and comments across hundreds of platforms in minutes.
That's wild.
It can artificially simulate a massive grassroots movement. It can make a fringe idea look like the overwhelming majority opinion, or it can make a legitimate public concern look like a crazy fringe conspiracy.
So if you are a normal person trying to figure out what's true and you express a dissenting thought online, the system can instantly hit you with thousands of synthetic bots telling you that you're wrong, basically making you feel completely isolated. That is terrifying.
It is. Throughout human history, information was incredibly scarce. The most valuable skill you could have was the ability to just find information. But today, information is hyperabundant, it is cheap, and honestly, much of it is synthetic. So the survival skill has completely flipped.
The most valuable skill now is filtering it out.
Exactly. The sources define it as discernment. It is the rigorous ability to filter the signal from the noise. Because if you cannot develop the critical thinking skills required to distinguish authentic human truth from algorithmic manipulation, you lose your cognitive sovereignty.
Wow.
Your worldview is basically just being programmed by the smartest machine in the room.
Okay, this is the moment where we take all these massive, heavy concepts and weave them together. We promised you a masterclass in connecting the dots, and this is where the picture really comes into focus.
Let's do it.
We have energy buffers at Cushing operating on the absolute margins. We have a crisis of institutional trust severely limiting how governments can respond to emergencies. And we have a digital layer creating deep physical and cognitive dependencies. How does the alternative systems analysis bring this all into one unified theory?
The briefing uses two vital interconnected concepts, systemic compression and transitional overlap. And I know those sound like phrases a consultant charges $10,000 an hour to say in a boardroom, but they actually describe our daily reality perfectly.
Break them down for me. Let's start with transitional overlap, because the constant friction and unease everyone is feeling right now, I mean, it feels like the world is constantly on the brink of ending.
Yeah, but our sources argue it is not necessarily an apocalyptic collapse. Transitional overlap means we are living through a period where two entirely different realities are forced to occupy the same space at the same time. You have the legacy systems, traditional banking, legacy media, 20th century governance structures that were built for a slower, more localized world. And they are buckling under the speed of modern life.
Right.
Simultaneously, you have new models. Decentralized finance, alternative information networks, artificial intelligence that are rapidly emerging, but they are still wild, unregulated, and not fully mature.
It's like trying to live in your house while the foundation is being completely replaced by contractors. Like, you were trying to cook dinner and put the kids to bed, but there are jackhammers in the living room, the old plumbing is leaking, and the new pipes aren't actually connected to the sink yet.
Exactly.
It's loud, messy, and deeply uncomfortable.
That is a brilliant analogy. You are living in the construction zone of a new civilization. Huh. And that leads directly to the second concept, which is systemic compression. In the past, if one system had a crisis, say, a localized banking failure, the other systems had enough slack to absorb the blow.
They have those shock absorbers we talked about at the start.
Yes. But today, because of everything we've discussed, all these systems are approaching their physical and social limits simultaneously. And they are completely intertwined.
So one affects the other.
Right. The energy grid powers the AI data centers. The AI data centers manage the algorithmic financial markets. The financial markets dictate the global supply chains. The supply chains deliver your food. And public trust is basically the only thing preventing a panic on all of the above.
So a bottleneck in just one area doesn't stay in that area. If the Strait of Hormuz gets blocked, energy prices spike, which strains the financial system, which disrupts food delivery, which causes the public to lose trust in the government's biosecurity or crisis management plans.
Exactly.
Systemic compression means the walls are closing in on our margin for error across the board.
The overall resilience of human civilization is compressing. So the exhaustion and anxiety you feel every time you look at the news isn't a personal failing. You are viscerally feeling the friction of this massive interconnected transition.
Which brings us to the most vital part of this entire deep dive. I'm talking directly to you, the listener, right now. We just laid out a structural reality that sounds incredibly overwhelming. If the physical buffers are gone, and the social trust is broken, and the AI is manipulating the narrative, how on earth are you supposed to wake up tomorrow, go to work, and navigate your daily life without completely burning out?
This is where the alternative briefing pivots from analysis to empowerment. And they introduce a concept drawn from consciousness and mindfulness communities. It's called the observer mindset.
The observer mindset.
Yeah. And what is critical to understand is that the analysts aren't treating this as a vague, esoteric, spiritual idea. They are defining it as a highly practical, absolutely mandatory survival skill for the age of compression.
Because the old way of surviving a crisis was hypervigilance, right? Mm-hmm. Obsessively doomscroll social media, track every geopolitical movement, and try to predict exactly what day the market would crash or the grid would go down.
But prediction-based thinking is a trap in an environment moving at machine speed. The variables are just too complex, and the algorithmic fear messaging is explicitly designed to keep you in a state of fight or flight. If you emotionally engage with every single crisis narrative, your nervous system will collapse long before the power grid ever does.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
So what does the observer mindset actually look like in practice? Give me a real-world scenario.
All right, let's say you are scrolling your feed tomorrow morning and you see a massive, terrifying headline. Something like, new virus strain detected in four global hubs, financial markets plunging.
Right.
The reactive mindset immediately panics. You click the article, your heart rate spikes, you start anxiety texting your family, and you make fear-based decisions about your day or your money.
You let the external event completely hijack your internal state.
Exactly. The observer mindset, however, treats that headline as just another data point. You take a breath, you step back, you say, okay, I observe that the media is amplifying a health narrative today. I observe that markets are reacting.
So you aren't ignoring it, you're just detached.
Right. You acknowledge the event without absorbing the panic. You maintain your emotional regulation. You evaluate the actual immediate threat to your local reality, which is usually zero, and you proceed with your day.
It's a difference between being tossed around inside a hurricane versus sitting safely in a weather station taking notes on the wind speed. Like, you are aware of the storm, but you refuse to let it blow you away.
That's exactly it. And this is how you build real resilience. Physical preparation is important, yes. But true sovereignty begins inward. Developing emotional regulation, prioritizing your physical health, taking time to spiritually ground yourself, and investing deeply in your local physical community.
Yeah.
These are the ultimate countermeasures to systemic compression.
So if the macro systems of the world are losing their buffers, your responsibility is to build massive buffers into your own microsystem. You become less dependent on the massive centralized planetary utility layer working perfectly because your internal foundation is rock solid.
Which leads us to a fascinating conclusion from our briefing today. We've spent a lot of time talking about the fragility of global infrastructure and governance, but it raises a profound alternative perspective on where true power actually resides.
I love this. Leave us with something to think about.
If resilience is ultimately a state of consciousness, rather than just physical or financial preparation, then perhaps the greatest disruption to the centralized system isn't a failure of infrastructure, a pipeline leak, or a broken algorithm.
What is it then?
Perhaps the ultimate disruption is a population that simply refuses to be rushed into a state of manic. When you control your reactions, you starve the fear-based narratives of the energy they need to survive. So what changes in your own life if you choose observation over reaction today?